Hey everyone, welcome to episode number 13 of Robot Radio. This is Greg Stanwood along with Andrew Martin. The big news this week so far has been the pleasantly quick rehab assignments for some of our injured players. We're starting to get some of the people we've lost over the past couple of weeks back into the fold. We've got what is it? Four players on rehab right now.
Four players. You got Francis. You got Street. You got
Street's not on rehab yet. It's
that's right. He's going to be
Francis, Buchholz, Hop, and Hamill.
Hop and yeah, exactly. My mistake. So Street will be next week. And
right.
We'll have another one there.
Yeah. So we have Taylor Buchholz down in Modesto right now. He's only pitched one inning so far. That's as of this recording on Saturday. I assume he will have pitched again either today or tomorrow. His rehab assignment's going to last a while. He's got, it's been a year and a half since he's thrown at all. It's been, even longer since he's thrown to pitchers or thrown in game situations because he was shut down at the end of 08. So he's had all that time as well where he wasn't in game situations. So
the point is, a long rehab assignment makes perfect sense for Buchholz, given the nature of his injury, the fact that he, didn't progress as fast as Francis. I mean, it's a Tommy John surgery. You gotta let that heal. That takes a while. Even if it's a pretty stable timetable, it's still he's gonna need a lot of rehab.
Yeah, he has been. I mean, obviously as I just said, he's been out of the fold for a while, and beyond concerns about injury, there's concerns that he's not going to immediately readjust to being thrown out there in the middle of, important situations, which really suggests to me that in addition to a long rehab assignment, he can be in rehab for a month with the minors. That's kind of, not really a specific deadline because you can actually just take them off rehab and put them back on rehab a couple of days later, and you have a whole nother month.
We got to think about, too, the fact that he's not even eligible to be reinstated until early June. And really, the way the bullpen is performing, in a general sense, let's not snipe individual games here, but as a general rule, he's not an absolutely critical cog that we have to have back right now.
Right. We've got people performing perfectly fine in the pen. It's been a pleasant surprise for the most part. All the people who would be, who going into the season, people like Corpus and Daly, who had their jobs at risk when Buchholz was planning to return, really have kind of stepped up so far and have made their case to stay. At this point, even though Buchholz is eligible to be reinstated in early June, it may even be longer than that before we see him. Depending on how they stack his rehab assignment up. And as soon as he returns, regardless, he's not going to be put back into the bottom half of the pen right away. He needs to be treated very gently for now before anything, particularly intense is thrown his way.
And this is all assuming, too, that he does well in his rehab.
Right. I mean, if he doesn't, if there's any concern performance-wise or injury-wise, they'll back him off and probably sit him down for a brief period of time again to like reset his rehab assignment as I described before.
And considering the leverage of the situations we'll probably see him in, if he's not ready, I wouldn't be surprised that we bring up Matt Reynolds instead. If we need, I stress this, if we need another bullpen piece. We don't need another bullpen piece, I don't know, I'm not saying let him, stagnate in AAA or something like that, but if we don't need him, we don't need him.
Well, that's also kind of tricky because it depends on who will be left in the pen by the time Buchholz comes back. I mean, hopefully, around the same time, if not sooner, we'll be seeing Houston Street back as well. And of course, as we've discussed multiple times, we're going to have kind of a crazy jumble of bullpen maneuvers that have to go down that are going to be based on, who's performing, but also who's the easiest to get rid of, who has the smallest salary to cut, who's left-handed, who's right-handed, so on, so on.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing up Matt Reynolds, well, we still have Bimal Morales and Flores on the team, would mean we have a bullpen of four lefties, which would be intense.
you know, that's a lot of left-handers, and, you know, part of me is like, that's just too many left-handers, considering the platoon advantage is right-hander on left-hander, and there's a, you know, what, 80-20 split of lefties to righties in the majors? Or maybe not that extreme, but you see my point. Well, we've got to kind of balance, well, what's going to be worse, the platoon split or Jim Tracy not having enough lefties to go to in tough situations?
Yeah, at some point, I mean, we don't really have time to do this today, but I would be interested in spending some time either here or maybe on the actual blog in a fan post or something like that, detailing the advantages and disadvantages of each player in the pen and, you know, kind of how much job security they have right now.
That could be an interesting post for one of our leads to come, because they, you know, with the rest of our staff, well, we'll talk site stuff later, but some of our more insightful writers should probably, you know, jump on that. I know that I'm not the guy to do that. I'll just be like, here's the numbers, deal with it.
So, in addition to Buchholz, we had Hop at Modesto for a game. Let's see, here's the AAA stats. He's with the Sky Sox now, but he played one game for Modesto. Where did I put that game? Here it is. He went 1-for-4 with an RBI and 2 Ks with Modesto. And then he played at the DH spot yesterday for Colorado Springs. He was 1-for-5, again with 2 Ks. And
that doesn't make me happy at all.
Well, true, but at the same time, I mean, it's easy to get nervous that, you know, we've been hoping that for the hot Brad Hop to return and that the injury will have cooled him down, which is perfectly possible. But at the same time, you know, there's different concentrations going on when you're in the middle of a rehab assignment. You know, you obviously want to show that you're ready to go. A big part of showing that you're ready to go is, can you run? You know, can you move correctly? Can you perform, you know, the basic maneuvering tasks of playing a game of baseball? Because, you know, at any given point, you know, even a hot player can go, say, 0-for-4, and, you know, that's no reason to automatically dismiss that they're in a slump or expect that they're in a slump.
Yeah. Funny how the standards change depending on who the player is.
Who would you think would have the opposite standard there?
Oh, I think you know who I think would have that opposite standard there.
Well,
he's in AAA right now. His name's Chris Iannetta.
So. Oh, see, I thought you were talking about Barmas in 2007 for some reason.
I don't know. Barmas was only up in 2007 for a couple weeks just to kind of...
Right.
For some reason, to show Tulowitzki how to take pitches.
Well, I thought you were referring to his time in AAA. But looking at Chris Iannetta, he...
He's posting a 982 OPS right now in AAA Springs,
yeah,
in 28 at-bats.
286 average, 607 slugging, 375 on base percentage.
Mm-hmm. 2 homers, 3 walks, 3 doubles, too. It's good to see him just getting hits.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what he needs to do. There weren't too many other concerns. I mean, he wasn't doing great defensively, but that's not the kind of thing you send somebody down to AAA to just, like, oh, throw to second base after every pitch. But for the offensive game, he's doing obviously much better than he was doing here, which is what you would hope would happen.
Yeah.
And with Miguel Olivo cooling off, I mean, I think a big part of how long we leave him down there depends on how much Olivo starts to cost us, or how long we need Paul Phillips on the team to coach Yoli Chacin.
Let me post some numbers at you right quick here. Miguel Olivo in the last 7 days, 437 OPS. You know, it could be a cold streak. It's not a big deal. Last 14 days, 607 OPS. That's uncomfortable. Last 28 days, 738 OPS. Yeah.
That's kind of a Miguel Olivo-ish number, though.
Oh, no, it makes perfect sense for him, but the point is that after his hot start, this is what always scares me about guys who have hot starts, because with my firm belief that everyone will eventually regress to the mean, because Miguel Olivo started so hot, that means him coming back to the mean was going to be, you know, plummeting. And that 437 OPS is plummeting.
Yeah,
and while he has the defensive skills and the potential to hit the home run still, he's starting to look a lot more like Miguel Olivo, and I'm okay with it still. I mean, he is what he is, and I knew what he was coming into this, but this kind of leads me to the, you know, it begs the question of, do you start taking playing time from him and giving it to Paul Phillips, or do you start to look at the Springs a little more soon?
Well, I mean, Iannetta's going to be back sooner rather than later. I just have to assume that based upon, you know, how he's responding down there and how Olivo has responded at the MLB level. But it's just something to bring up because, Paul Phillips has been apparently instrumental in helping Rogers and Chacin adjust to their starts here. And even though he hasn't been catching Rogers, in fact, they showed an image on the opponent feed or on the Dodger feed last night where after an inning, the first place Rogers went for a discussion was with Paul Phillips.
I don't understand why they're not having Phillips catch Rogers. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. If he's going to catch Chacin, catch Rogers too. It just makes more sense.
I guess the only concern there would be they're back-to-back in the rotation. You know, we'd be putting Phillips out there for back-to-back games. I don't know if that's necessarily a serious problem, but...
Well, we're putting Olivo out there back-to-back-to-back-to-back games. Why not put Phillips out there back-to-back so we can just have Olivo be back-to-back-to-back?
I guess there's just kind of this assumption that, you know, even though Olivo has been struggling, there's still some sort of, you know, cataclysmic drop-off between Olivo and Phillips in terms of potential productivity there.
I wouldn't doubt it, but we got to kind of remember, if we're going to look at an OPS productivity, I mean, Olivo's going to be better than him, but it's going to be all slugging-based, and, you know, when you're on a cold streak, your average is going to drop off, which means your slugging is going to drop off, but he doesn't have a, you know, good eye at the plate to be able to complement that on-base percentage with walks, or the average, I mean, with walks, to build a strong on-base percentage.
Right. Well, Brad Hopp, anyway, is going to be activated on Monday, so he'll be ready to go for the Philadelphia series, which begins Monday and then goes through Wednesday. Jason Hamill is also a AAA right now, and he has made one start, and it seems like for now the plan is for that one start to be his only start. He went seven innings, so at least the longevity is good, but he gave up, let's see, he gave up four earned runs in seven innings, good for an ERA of 5.14, about 1.5 whip. I don't have any fancy stats up here right now, but they wouldn't really do any good for just explaining one start.
Well, if you take a look, he struck out six guys and walked one, allowed one home run. That's kind of a Jason Hamill start right there, to be honest. And nine hits, well, it sucks, sure. I mean, honestly, that's where you got to kind of think of, okay, how many of those hits were like extreme line drives that went to the wall and or you get the idea, stuff like that. How many hits crawled through and how many hits were legitimate hits?
And it should be pointed out that during his starts in the majors so far this year, he was probably averaging giving up like nine hits in four innings as opposed to seven.
Well, that's also, I mean, with Jason Hamill too, I think when he comes back, I mean, I still have faith in the guy. Even though no one else does, and his ERA is like 8 right now, he's been really like the most bad luck pitcher on the team so far. Him and Cook. And with Cook, it's to be expected because Cook is such a contact pitcher anyways that stuff's going to crawl through all the time. But Hamill, he has those meltdown innings, which stinks to watch. But really, I mean, like, I pulled up his TRA on StatCorner.com and... You know, that if you recall from one of the articles I wrote, that TRA is kind of the report card of how you did, and he's actually one of our few, you know, one of our positive pitchers. Not extremely positive, but just a shade above average, a 4.48 TRA, which isn't spectacular by any stretch, but it kind of says, hey, he's doing this stuff to get the outs.
They're just not being actually completed.
Exactly, and I'm not even trying to necessarily indict the defense, although that wouldn't be an unfair call the way they've been playing lately, but... The fact is that I really do think that Hamill is doing better than his ERA would suggest.
Speaking of Matt Reynolds, I realized he was on fire down there, but I didn't realize he's pitched 17 innings without an earned run.
That's pretty absurd, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. He's got 19 strikeouts, one walk.
I'm taking a look at Stat Corner actually covers the minor leagues as well, because with the new game day stuff going on down there and the wealth of information that's coming in from the minors, we're able to get more and more and more information on them. And Matt Reynolds has a 1.79 TRA in his in his outing so far, and he's I think stud's an okay word to use.
Matt Daly got off to a similar start last year, and of course the spot opened up for him in that case, and he was able to stick. You know, if there were some injury to the pen or some other issue that's unforeseen, or, you know, we just, in other words, need somebody to come up before Street and Buchholz are ready, or after they're ready, and we've already made the, we already have our bullpens set in stone, so to speak, he would almost certainly be one of the first people to look at. He's not on the 40-man. He will be probably in September. I mean, he'll get a call-up, I have to assume.
Well, it just makes me wonder who we're going to cut.
Well,
because someone's going to have to get axed for him to get a spot.
Oh, absolutely.
Barring catastrophic injury and, you know, knocking on wood and all those good things right here, you know. There, you heard it.
Yeah, I'll have to, I always have interest in all these roster transactions, so I'm going to have to go and do some digging around and try to see if I can predict how this is all going to go down. But, it's just too far out right now to even think about.
So with Hop coming back then, you being a roster guru, is EYJ the automatic demotion?
He's the convenient demotion. The demotion I think I would prefer would be Giambi.
Yeah, it's not a demotion. That's pretty much a cut.
Right. Well, I mean, a cut is a demotion.
Well, okay, yes, it is a demotion. He'd be getting fired more so than getting cut, though.
Uh-huh.
Eric Young is also one of our few positive bats right now as far as weighted on base average goes, as reported by Stat Corner. It's funny, in his 5 plate appearances, Paul Phillips is like decimal points below what this website records in the negative, but for all intents and purposes, he's batting average. Hop still with his 485 weighted on base average, and again, this is by Stat Corner's numbers, not Fangraphs. He's leading the team right now, even with only his 50 plate appearances, and the next closest is Stewart with twice the plate appearances and still fewer runs created for the team above average. But Stewart, Tulo, EY, and Gonzalez are all positive, and Hop, obviously, and then everyone else is in the negative.
Before we talk about Jeff Francis, I do want to talk about Francis, but since we're kind of on the topic right now of the offense, you know, a lot of people have been worried about our production with runners in scoring position, and we think that we have come up with an argument against that concern.
Well, when you got to look at runners in scoring position splits, I mean, for starters, I just don't really look at them that much because I think that they are too prone to very biased analysis. Like, we failed in that game, therefore we suck with runners in scoring position. Right now, we're putting up an 807 OPS with runners in scoring position. That's good. I don't know if you heard, but, you know, 807 OPS is good. I put that player on my team no matter what, and to have the entire team batting that with runners in scoring position, I don't think there's much room for complaint. I mean, yes, in a situational game when we don't get it done, yeah, that stinks. But, I mean, I will take the production that we are getting right now. It is much better than it could be. Like, Houston has a 693 OPS with runners in scoring position, but they're also last in the National League in that regard. We're doing pretty well for ourselves.
We're above the NL average, I believe, are we not?
Yeah. Well, being fifth, yeah, we are above the National League average. Let me see if it... Yeah, total, a 794 OPS is average. We are at 807, so we're above the average.
So really the concern here, as I understand it, is less that we're not getting hits when they count. It's more that we're not producing in the most ideal of times when we need... when we actually do need the runners in scoring position.
Even the best batters will fail 60% of the time. So let's keep that in mind here. We cannot possibly execute on every situation. Like, if you look back at the fourth and just take a given game and say, oh, well, we took the lead in the fourth but then gave it in the seventh and we had a chance to get it back in the eighth but we blew it. Yeah, well, we took it in the fourth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean... Yeah, it sucks that we didn't do it later on in the game, but if we gave up the lead later on in the game then and we didn't do it and we didn't take the lead in the fourth or whatever, you'd say, oh, well, that incident in the fourth, well, we should have taken it there. And yes, if everything goes right, if everybody gets a hit and everybody drives a run across the plate, yeah, we're going to win every game. nobody wins every game, nobody drives in every runner, and this is just part of the game you have to deal with, because we're doing all right. Our record may not show it right now, but things are going to start falling into place. It just happens.
So on to Jeff Francis. We have he's also completed only one rehab start. He's at Double A Tulsa right now. His start was a lot shorter. He only went 4.2 innings pitched. There were some things being thrown about that he might be ready to go after just one more rehab start. I'm a little nervous about that, especially if it's just two rehab starts at Double A.
I don't want to bring him back that soon. If they're going to baby him at all, just keep babying him. I mean, we're not in a spot of. We're definitely in a spot of need, but with Hamill and De La Rosa, well, we have no idea on De La Rosa yet, do we?
We know that apparently the doctors don't think he needs surgery, which means unless the injury gets re-aggravated, he should be back in June-ish.
Well, the point is that at least getting Hamill back, I mean, we could make case either way that may or may not be an upgrade over Rogers right now, but like I said, I think he's bound for a solid rebound. If Francis, I would rather not rush him. Just a fact.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Again, I think they want him to come up after one more start and supplant Greg Smith in the rotation. And a lot of that may depend not only on Francis' start, but on Smith's start on Monday, how that goes.
Yeah, but this is kind of do or die time for Greg Smith here.
Definitely.
And as much as Jamie Moyer is an inspiration to us all, like, a guy Greg Smith's age and lack of absolute pinpoint control just straight up cannot afford to be throwing low 80s on his fastball and then just praying his changeup will bail him out of everything, because it's not happening. Especially when he's walking, six a game now or something like that.
It looks like Jason Hamill will be called up on Wednesday to start, which is Esmel Rogers' spot, which means, assuming nothing else strange goes on, it looks like Rogers will probably be optioned back down on Wednesday, and Jason Hamill will return. So then we're going to have three of our presumed normal starters. And, after that, Chacin, assuming he has a good outing today, or at least decent, is going to probably, make the case to be the one who stays with the team until De La Rosa is ready.
Mm.
And then Smith is on the line when Francis returns. So the other kind of team internal transaction that has occurred is that it is now basically set in stone that Jim Tracy's going to prefer to use Manny Corpus in the ninth inning. That's the way all the articles have been phrased, but in reality that means Manny Corpus is now our closer. Though they haven't really said so as much. So your disappointed groan will lead into your explanation, I take it.
Well, let me... It stinks. There's so many different ways I'm going to approach this right now, and I've mentioned this before, but it's kind of the difference of how I would do things versus how I know the organization's going to do things and how I would tweak what they do rather than just do exactly what I do. I'm not so much against the idea of Manny Corpus closing. I'm not horribly against the idea of closer by committee until Street's back either, but I'm a little concerned about Manny Corpus. Now, I want to say pimp my article, but that sounds a little worse than it needs to. But I will go ahead and advertise my Wednesday article coming up here. It's I'm concerned that Manny Corpus, while his ERA is good and he seems to be getting the job done, a lot of other stuff that we're seeing about him is just horrifying, because it seems like he is riding on a cloud right now, and any moment here, there's going to be a thunderclap and he's coming straight back down to earth. And if we put him into the ninth inning now, and then he starts to have this implosion, or at least, regression to the mean, we could be in for a very long May.
Yeah, and plus, not only is it because we'd be timing it with putting him in a more important situation, it would also probably be much worse for his continued, hopefully, general ascent back into form than it would be if he had a couple, if he hit a bad spot as a long reliever and, started to work at it from there. It's probably a lot harder on somebody to, blow two games in the ninth inning or something like that.
It's oftentimes just as hard on the – or it's harder on the pitching coach than the pitcher. Yeah, can you imagine poor Bob Abedaka? See, it doesn't necessarily make him a depressed sack of tears to watch him.
He always looks that way, though. I think pitching coaches are just generally sad, depressed people.
I love Bob Abedaka. I will still fight tooth and nail that Bob Abedaka is one of the better, if not the best, pitching coach in the National League. I will make that case. I mean, yes, and with due deference to Dave Duncan, I think that, yes, Dave Duncan has made, restored aces to their former glory in the form of Chris Carpenter, but Bob Abedaka has taken waiver wire claims and turned them into studs, if you look at Jorge De La Rosa. But anyways, no, back to Corpus. When you say his reascent to being an effective relief pitcher, I'm just not convinced that he's even doing it. I mean, I'm not just trying to say, aha, it's all luck, because, I mean, yeah, he's doing something right. He's throwing strikes or whatever, but he's, it's the fact that he's not getting the ground balls that he used to. Even when he was, had the last two seasons where he's had troubles, he still has got a decent ground ball rate. Either his two-seamer's not breaking the way it should, or his slider's not being thrown the way it should, but whatever it is, he's becoming kind of a fly baller, and that scares me.
From a mental perspective, there's definitely been a change. In early 08 and late 08, I mean, he didn't do too badly in the middle of 08, but on the ends, he just looked very, shy, and he didn't take presence of anything. And then, of course, in 09, we don't know how long it was, but he was apparently in pain for quite a lot of it. The way he commands himself and kind of his mood while pitching is definitely different. And I think, depending on how much stock you can put in something like that, which isn't a whole lot, but it can give you an idea of maybe that, his mindset is partially responsible for his effectiveness.
And I'd like it if that were the truth. I mean, if him suddenly wanting to succeed and do well is what's making him do well, then that's why he's doing well. I said this so many times, if you think that a hot streak because you're rubbing a rabbit's foot and eating a slice of pizza before every game is what's making you play well, that's exactly what's doing it. whatever it is that you think is doing it, that's doing it. But just be ready to, don't be too, ready to cling on to that once it's done or whatever. If Corpus is thinking that his new outlook on life and the fact that he has like a child now or whatever the story is what's helping him perform better and step his game up, then good. That is what he's doing. Keep that mature mindset, Manny, because we could really use you to be good right now, especially considering that we're paying you money.
You brought up that storm cloud thing earlier. I mean, I still try not to be the ultimate pessimist when it comes to the bullpen. I just don't know if I'm, stubbornly obsessed with fearing that they're going to explode. But, I've been complaining about them ever since the beginning of the podcast. And, the people I've been most concerned about, which are really namely Flores, Belial, and Daly, have all done fine.
Belial's been pretty impressive. He's a... I always say that the good thing about Matt Belial is that, he's unimpressive, he throws strikes, and fact is, I think as of today, he's second on the team, second on the bullpen, I should say, in a number of strikes to balls thrown, just a direct ratio there.
That's good.
And right about two strikes to one per ball, and that's I'm very appreciative of that from him.
How's Matt Daly doing in that department? Because Matt, that was kind of his most notable strength last year, was that he was throwing strikes all the time.
Well, Matt Daly is actually in the bottom part of our bullpen. He's throwing 1.6 strikes per ball. Below him is Morales at 1.43, and Joe Bimel, 1.41, is at the bottom of the list there.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, Bimel's been getting those outs. I actually was reading on the True Blue LA blog when Bimel pitched last night. That one pitch, I can't remember. Was it to was it to Ethier or? He came in to face somebody important. I don't remember. Maybe it was Loney or something like that.
That's completely slipped my mind, and I feel like an idiot right now.
Yeah.
Let me pull it up. You just keep talking. Okay. I'll find some information.
They were joking that it's the power of Joe Bimel to be able to come in and then just throw one pitch and then just have it be a straight line out to exactly the right spot. It's just the kind of thing he does. He has that reputation of just succeeding somehow against the best of opponents when he needs to, even when, you know, it's not really of his own doing.
Well, he's had some big plays this year, but yeah, he got Andre Ethier to ground out to second.
Right.
They after the Matt Kemp triple to score Carroll, they brought in Bimal to face Ethier and got that ground out. But against San Diego, if I recall correctly, he had a couple big-time groundouts after getting himself into some trouble, too.
Yeah, no, he's been kind of a rock. You know, it's not necessarily the most impressive stuff he's throwing, but he's coming in and getting people out when he needs to come in and get people out. And speaking of Jamie Carroll, he just owned us yesterday. He embarrassed us. He was active doing just killing us on every level, practically. You know, he was hitting off us. He was making incredible defensive plays, you know, and so on. So
I still wish he was back with the team. I mean, you know, I'm glad Moore is doing better, but I wish Carroll was here still.
Uh-huh.
Carroll went yesterday. He went 2 for 4 with a double, a run, an RBI, and yeah. A 160 WPA on the game. 16% of the win belonged to Jamie Carroll.
Yeah, he can play. I mean, I remember him from, you know, 06 and 07, and, you know, back then I was still new to experiencing baseball, but I always liked him, so.
Well, I liked him in 2006 a bunch for all the obvious reasons. He was good at everything.
And he wasn't really a starter, but became a starter when, I guess it was, what, Luis Gonzalez who was down?
Luis Gonzalez was never that good to begin with. And we didn't have Aaron Miles to fall back on anymore because we traded him for Ray King. And so we are left with Jamie Carroll, who really did win himself a spot there. But then 2007, when he couldn't even crack the Mendoza line for most of the season, I mean, the redeeming quality of Jamie Carroll in 2007 was that miserable sack fly.
He, at the very least, you know, he was a utility player that year, so it wasn't a serious problem.
That's true, but I guess that's why I want him back again, too, to be a utility player, but I guess the Dodgers need him more, what with for calling the DL and stuff like that.
Oh,
and
yeah, Ronnie certainly.
And Ronnie Belliard being totally sustainably, well, how is Belliard doing right now? See, now I got myself thinking, I think he's on the DL, too, right now.
I don't think he is. I think Belliard's there. I don't recall seeing anything about him being on the DL.
I am checking their website right now, and I'm sure everyone is interested in listening to me talk about the Dodgers DL.
I can say something about the Dodgers DL. It's going to have one less player on it today. Manny Ramirez is coming back.
Yeah, and what's interesting, I was reading a little bit of the commentary on I might have been on True Blue LA about how the Dodgers are doing similar things with what the Rockies are doing right now. They're saying, oh, we have, you know, Manny coming back, so rather than we're going to go ahead and send down Xavier Paul rather than DFA and Garrett Anderson. And they had another pitcher coming back, and they're saying
right. They had Jeff Weaver coming back, and they sent down John Eli.
Rather than DFA and Russ Ortiz.
Right.
Russ Ortiz.
No, you mean Ramon Ortiz.
Ramon. Oh, gosh.
They already pulled the trigger on Russ Ortiz. He is he's long gone.
Okay, no. It looks like the Dodgers do not have a Belliard on the DL.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's there. Their bench right now is it's complicated with Ramirez coming back, but it would be Johnson and Anderson in the outfield, and then Belliard and Nick Green, is that who it is in the infield?
Yeah, I believe Nick Green's with him. He was with Boston last year. Let's see. Belliard right now, and let's see, I'm trying to find him on here. He's not near the top, I'll tell you that much. Well, let's see. 820 OPS, he can't complain too much about that.
No.
I wish I could, but actually, it looks like they have him playing more third base than second base.
That's interesting.
Batting 289, 353, 467. That's a pretty solid line right there.
Yeah.
Go figure that Juan Uribe and Ronnie Belliard are both having solid seasons so far.
Our former middle infielders.
Whoa, what happened there?
What?
Ah, you broke up right there. What'd you say?
Oh, I said our former middle infielders.
Uribe, yeah, exactly.
And, yeah.
At least Nathy Perez is gone forever from baseball.
He was still around in 06, wasn't he? He was like with Detroit or something like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess the point is that he's not good. And No, I actually they did an analysis on Fangraphs at one point about Nathie Perez, saying that for his career he was actually like barely. He might have even been worth negative WAR
for the entire time. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Let's see if I can pull that up right quick here. Let's see. Yeah, I don't think this is really worth it. Let's see. Nathie Perez Fangraphs. There we go.
Dude, it's always worth it to make fun of Nathie Perez.
I don't think you can get away from it. Let's see. Total career WAR. No, this only goes back to 2002 because
right.
That's when they really started capturing the fielding metrics better. But he was worth, let's see, total negative 1.2 WAR, and he got paid $14.4 million for it.
Nice. So he got $14.4 million to what?
Be worse than AAA players.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, I guess, I mean, I was trying to think. He costs, you know, a certain number of wins per season.
Mackerel, if you look at his weighted runs above average, because they can calculate that going all the way back to whatever.
Right.
Because it's just based on weighted on base average. Nathie Perez was worth negative 194 runs over the course of his career.
Ouch.
Negative 194 runs was he, and wow, the only thing that kept him even remotely afloat was that he was a good fielding infielder.
Right.
That
okay.
Was he, literally it.
I have him called up right here on Fangraphs as well. He has the fourth worst wins above replacement metric from 2002 to present in baseball, and he has the worst batting metric. He is negative 127.8. And is positive in fielding 17.4.
Go ahead. for players now, I wrote this in my article last week about the plus metrics weighted on or WRC plus and OPS plus. If we go ahead and look at all time batters, all time based on weighted WRC plus. With a minimum of 5,000 plate appearances, so we're not just talking about one guy who came up and fouled out and that was his career.
Right.
Babe Ruth is the best at 204, and Nathie Perez is the absolute worst batter of all time at 60. I am not making this up, 60.
Oh, I didn't say you were. I certainly believe it. Looking at some of the other negative WAR leaders, we have Gary Bennett at negative 0.9. We have Aaron Miles at negative 0.5. Ross Gallode at negative 0.4. Delmon Young at negative 0.4.
Aaron Miles, God bless Aaron Miles. I love him because he used to be a Rocky, and that's about the only reason I would. But the only thing, he is like the representation of why batting average is such a, what's the word I'm looking for here?
Useless stat.
No, not useless.
No, I know. I was just joking.
Yeah, of course you were. People are going to make we're gonna get a bunch of angry emails now or something like that. No, we never get emails. What am I talking about? But why can be such like wool over your eyes? It can be a very deceiving number. He has like a 280 career batting average or something like that, which is halfway decent, but doesn't walk much and he does nothing but slap singles and he's a questionable base runner and a questionable defender.
He's an average defender at best according to the metric.
Exactly. Basically, he is. He has a career potential of being a iffy utility guy, and yet he's hung around in the majors for a while. I mean, we traded Uribe to Chicago for him, and we traded him to St. Louis for Ray King. And then I can't remember if St. Louis traded him to Chicago or if it was a free agency thing. But he went to Chicago, and now he's and then St. Louis just picked him up on a minor league contract. It's amazing what being scrappy will do for you.
He had a weird thing, because didn't he go to, like, Oakland for a brief time for some reason? He signed there, and then they let him go or something like that?
That sounds familiar, as long as we're not talking about Willie Taveras on accident here.
Oh, we should. He also has some reason to make fun of him.
Just so everyone knows, you are now listening to Greg and Andrew looking up players and making fun of them. I hope you enjoy this segment of the show.
And, of course, you know, people are going to say in the comments, you know, oh, they're, you know, you should be envious of their position. They make millions of dollars.
Yeah, well, I'm having fun. Okay, let's see. Let's take a look at the career of Aaron Miles. In June of 1995, he was drafted by the Astros in the 19th round, and he signed, apparently, on June 17th. And then he was drafted from the White Sox by the White Sox from the Astros in the Rule 5 draft in 2000. 2001, at the end of the season, became a free agent. Signed about a month later with the White Sox again. Then he became a free agent a year later. Then he signed with the White Sox again, and then became a free agent a year later. No, it didn't become a free agent a year later, because December of 2003, he was traded for Juan Uribe to the Rockies.
Right.
2005, he was traded with the Rockies with Larry Bigby for Ray King. 2007, free agent. Signed as a free agent with St. Louis again. Then, following year, free agent. Following year, no, let's see. Like, 3 weeks later, signed to the Cubs. Traded by the Cubs with Jake Fox of the Athletics for a couple minor leaguers and Jeff Gray.
And that was to Oakland, yeah. And then Oakland, he was traded again to Cincinnati for Willie Taveras.
Adam Rosales and Willie Taveras. And then he was cut by the Reds in April. And signed to the Cardinals as a free agent.
And you know, the other funny story is not only Aaron Miles, but Willie Taveras was designated for assignment by the Oakland Athletics as soon as he got to the team. The only reason they took him was so they would pay his salary. Like, they agreed. We don't even need him. We will agree to take Adam Rosales and the cost of Willie Taveras. We don't even want Willie Taveras.
It might as well have been a cash trade right there.
Exactly.
And Adam Rosales, let's see what he's done. 2010 in Oakland, actually not a miserable pickup. He looks like Aaron Miles. He's, hang on 1 second. Excuse me, I had to hit the cough button. He's batting .284, .330, .395 with a 99 OPS plus. In 89 plate appearances this year with Oakland. So good for him. Good for him. Things
Adam
like that.
Rosales?
Adam Rosales. Good for him. Apparently, according to Sean Smith's total zone, he is a positive third baseman, an average, a positive second baseman as well. And he played three innings at shortstop and didn't do anything there.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, good for him. I always like. It's funny because these guys are, yes, they're Major League Baseball players, and I always just find it kind of fun to hear, hey, good for him. This scrappy guy who probably shouldn't be making it is doing something at least. Good for you. Good for you. Proud of you. Your mother's proud of you, too.
Well, we've spent the last 10 minutes joking about Nephi Perez and Aaron Miles, so I think it's about time to wrap things up.
But everyone loves this.
We'll do a special edition of just this someday. We'll talk about former Rockies such as Todd Hollinsworth, Quinton McCracken, and Corey Sullivan, which appear on this list.
Oh, Q, what a stud. And by stud, I mean, what an awesome name.
Yeah, there's a lot of former Rockies on this list. Brent Maine. Josh Barfield's not a former Rocky, but he's a former NL West castoff.
No, we were looking at Barfield at one point, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know, Bard is who we used to have, right?
He never played on the team.
I think Bard was in our minor league system. See, now you got me looking up another player now. Because I don't want to sound like a... Josh Bard.
I think it's just because he was from Colorado and not because he played in our system.
Nope.
But I could
drafted by the Rockies in the third round of the 99 draft, signed August 12th. Traded with Jody Garrett for Jacob Cruz.
And then Jody Garrett in our system, too?
Oh, yeah. You didn't know that?
No.
Yeah, former Rockies.
I don't know these things. I don't know the history of the team.
Fine. Jacob Cruz played for, 44 games, 90 plate appearances, and was .567 OPS. Great trade. Meanwhile, Jody Garrett is still playing in Major League Baseball.
Outfielder, yeah.
So Josh Barfield, and I promise this will be the last thing we look at. So do you think what? Let's see. Right now, Josh Barfield is playing for nobody. Did he sign a Josh Barfield? No, he signed a free agent with the Padres. He's probably in their minor leagues.
He's back with San Diego.
Yeah. Well, he's in the minors. He's not actually.
Yeah, he is. I see it on his profile page.
His only full season came with San Diego. Actually, an okay year for himself. Just slightly below average at the plate and a bit rough in the field at second base, but. Now, whenever I hear his name, it's spelled like a certain lasagna-loving cat that we all know and love, and all I can think of is Bud Black going, Barfield, and that. Yeah.
I wonder if he hates Mondays.
Yeah.
it is funny that, he was traded for Kevin Kuzmanoff, and the year that Kevin Kuzmanoff leaves San Diego, Barfield comes back.
Is he trying to talk about Scott Hairston?
Yeah.
Because Scott Hairston was traded for Kevin Kuzmanoff, I thought.
No, it was Barfield was traded to the... Hairston was never on the Indians, dude.
Oh, no, I'm thinking about the I'm just thinking about Kuzminov. Okay, never mind. I'm thinking backwards. Cause
yeah, yeah, yeah. Kuzminov was traded to Oakland for Harrison.
Yeah, yeah.
But Barfield was traded to Cleveland for Kuzminov.
Gotcha. So, let's see. There's a guy named Rick Monday. I had to look this up. Please say he has some part of his career was in San Diego.
This podcast will never end.
No. He played with the Dodgers from 77 to 84, so I guess that'd be the closest connection right there.
Yeah, L.A. basically is San Diego, or rather, San Diego's a suburb of L.A.
I thought they were like 5 hours apart from each other.
They are. It's just a joke, because L.A. is,
that big, huh?
The best way to describe it is that the entire part of the coast between L.A. and San Diego is filled with L.A. suburbs until you get to San Diego. So it's just, why not just keep going? San Diego's a suburb of L.A.
Ah, fair enough, fair enough. The sprawling Los Angeles metropolis that extends to everywhere.
It goes down Baja California into Mexico, yeah.
Nice. Okay, so it's official then. So Josh Barfield officially hates Rick Monday.
Okay, there you go. We have come to a very important conclusion that is relevant to the Rockies.
Barfield!
Anyway, I think that about wraps it up. On behalf of myself and Andrew, take care.
Barfield!
I knew it.